Very good. I'd like to call to order our January 22nd meeting here of the Customer Service and Planning Committee. And can we call the roll, please?
Chair Wolf?
Here.
Co-Chair Reddick?
Here.
Co-Chair Weisner?
Here.
Director Banks? Director Dotson?
Here.
Director Sweeney? Chair, we have a quorum.
Thank you very much. I think you've all received a copy of the committee meeting of November 18th, and I'm looking for a motion to approve those minutes unless there's any corrections or...
Move to approve as submitted.
Second.
Okay, we have a motion and a second. All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion's carried. The minutes are approved. And moving on then, we have a central topic today dealing with sustainability, and I'd ask our executive director to lead off that discussion.
Great, thank you. And I'll almost immediately turn it over to both Brian Wagner and Rocco to talk about the presentation or give the presentation for today's meeting. I think primarily Brian, actually. But you know, we've been talking about for some time, and I think had on the work plan for this committee and its predecessor committees, the idea of doing something around sustainability. And we have done, I think, and staff has done a great job of pulling together a great deal of information that gives a nice history lesson about what the tollway has done relative to sustainability so far, but also positions us for, you know, opportunities to make some policy decisions and for all of you to give some guidance about what we should be doing going forward. You know, as we think about sustainability efforts relative to the tollway, I think we think about kind of two buckets. We think about our capital efforts and building and obviously all the work we do on the highways or construction of buildings relative to the operation of our system. But there's also the actual operations of the tollway. We use energy. We maintain landscape. We do a lot of things that impact the environment and impact our green efforts. So we thought we would talk a little bit about those two categories. Probably for our purposes, we think, at least at the staff level, thinks that more focus could be placed on the operations side of sustainability, but anything you have to say, obviously, in terms of our capital efforts, we welcome that feedback as well. But Brian is going to give us the presentation and walk through what we're doing so far, and also hopefully this can be an opportunity for some really robust and informal discussion around sustainability. I'm sorry, am I wrong? And I'm saying Brian, and it's really supposed to
no.
be you?
No, talking Brian, right.
I just see glances being traded, and I'm trying to adapt to what I'm reading.
Point. His name's on the slide.
Yes. So, we appreciate, first and foremost, I'd say we appreciate your hard work, because both Brian in particular, but also Rocco and others, I'm sure, put a great deal of effort into preparing the materials and the policy that we're going to be at least initially discussing today. And Brian, why don't you come on up and start the presentation.
If I could say one thing,
yeah, of course. We can't allow an opportunity to pass.
If I can, just give a little bit of background too, because from an agency standpoint, as the director said, we have made a lot of great strides really over the past decade or so. This is really the next big step from an agency standpoint. We've really focused hard on something, so this is the next opportunity. I wanted to say something about Brian too, just so you understand the context where Brian's come from. He started this agency, I don't know how many years ago, as an environmental planner, so basically assisting out with as far as construction projects go. Through his hard efforts, interviewed, received a promotion as the senior environmental planner, so overseeing really the policy, the projects and the permitting, and making sure that everything that happens in construction is in compliance. So all the permits, everything that we have for the Move Along My program, it's really due to Brian's hard work and his team's hard work. He's recently received his tenure here, you know, another promotion. A new title is Environmental Policy and Program Manager. What that really is intended to do is to start looking at the broader agency policy. So it's the evolution of somebody who understood what was happening from the ground level in the field through managing staff, getting permits, and really working out over the last however many years you've been here, seven, whatever it is.
Going on eight.
Understanding really where we've come from and where to improve by working with the different departments in here. So I think this is, you know, he provides a a nice evolution of where we've been. So.
All right. Well, thanks, pardon me. Thanks for the introductions, and thank you for the opportunity. It's pretty exciting that I get the majority of the agenda here to myself and have this discussion with you guys. From my standpoint, as Rock was pointed out, permitting isn't the most glamorous thing, so I rarely have the opportunity to stand up here and discuss topics with y'all. I think the last time I was here was talking about the M1 facility and the lead design and solar arrays that we're putting up there. But so some of that will be touched on lightly here, but like I said, focus more on sustainability as a whole for the agency, with particular attention paid to our operations. And while I will delve into what we are doing on the capital side, again, we think we have the most room for improvement, but definitely open to suggestions, ideas on elsewhere, but most room for improvement on the operational standpoint. So, like I said, what I'm going to be going over is what is sustainability. There's a lot of talk about sustainability and green. Are they the same? What are our current efforts? What's the vision for the tollway moving forward? Policy, discussion of that, next steps, and work plans. So. All right. So, what is sustainability? It's more than being just green. It's more than a focus on one particular item. Many of you have probably seen this diagram before. It's focused on a triple bottom line. You've maybe heard that phrase before. It was coined about 20 years ago. And really, in the last 10 years, there's been a lot more focus on sustainability. So sustainability is definitely being green, but you don't want to overdo one aspect of something and have shortfalls on the other. So we need to focus not only on being green, but the economics of being green and the social impacts of it as well. So that's kind of what the triple bottom line is, and what this diagram points out is, you know, finding that you know, happy medium there is truly what sustainability is. Okay, so the our current capital program, there's a commitment to be the cleanest and greenest in the tollway's history. I thank you for that commitment. It's provided a lot of support for myself and others to do some what we feel would be pretty innovative things. From my standpoint, stormwater treatment, stormwater BMPs, mitigation, I've been able to develop some unique projects there. From a materials standpoint, our materials engineer has a very aggressive materials program where we are constantly improving our material usage and operations from a construction standpoint, and thereby reducing our carbon footprint, our environmental footprint. So some of the things that we're doing on the capital side, larger scale things that we're doing, is we've developed an environmental studies manual, and we've updated it, and that gives our designers a framework in understanding which to function under for all design projects, focusing on all regulatory requirements, making sure those are all adhered to through the design and construction process. We have INVEST, which is, we're implementing INVEST, which is the Federal Highway Administration's sustainability rating system, essentially LEED for highways. And we're also developing an LCA tool, which will give us a carbon footprint or environmental footprint of our projects. We have LEED. All of our new, pardon me, M facilities, our maintenance facilities, will be a minimum LEED silver design. And then we also, I'll give you some examples here of sustainable design and construction projects that we have. So just those few bullet points, they're very brief, but they're very substantial in effort. You know, and this kind of highlights, well, briefly, our efforts on the capital side. With these established programs being LEED and INVEST, we feel that we're doing a really good job, are making all efforts possible from a design and construction standpoint to implement sustainability. So not just focusing on environment, economics, or the social aspects of things. These are federally established programs. I think all of us are familiar with LEED, and probably most of us have heard, or at least heard of, Invest after, you know, being in the building for the last year and a half.
So,
yes.
Ask a question.
If it's possible to stand back and be impartial about the tollway, how do we compare with other construction, public construction entities in terms of our progress and our absolute position on sustainability?
That's a really good question.
It's probably an unfair question because you can't answer it truthfully, but try.
Not maybe for the reason that you think.
No.
I can say this, that FHWA, so there's a recent meeting or convention in Washington. It was the TRB, is that correct, Paul?
Yeah.
TRB.
Transportation Research Board.
Okay.
Where FHWA has a large presence there. And Steve Gillen and Brian Smith, who is with RGEC, did a presentation on our Invest implementation, and FHWA was very pleased and with the information that we were sharing, and per conversations with them, they feel that we are a leader in the implementation of Invest, and they will continue to look to us for guidance on further development and implementation of the program.
Well, that's good. Well, maybe I should have asked the question a different way. Are there other places that we can learn from?
Yes, there's definitely room to improve. We aren't, the penultimate in sustainability. So yes.
So in terms of construction, who would you point to, and in what areas, are there, best practices or leaders in different categories that we might, need to do some further exploration or think about adopting some additional. Policies or initiatives or what have you.
I think the Invest program is a great program, and FHWA's tracking of it they do a really good job with it and highlighting exemplary projects. So looking to them for those unique projects that are out there. From an agency standpoint, while I haven't done a thorough investigation to say, okay, we rank number 3 or number 1 or number 20, I would say we're looked upon as one of the more aggressive with respect to implementation of sustainable practices, as per discussions at the TRB conference.
That's helpful. And maybe if it's about sort of model projects, that's a good way to think about it. So my question was wrong. It's not about what entity or what state or what authority is best. It's, are there examples of specific projects?
Yeah, can I just say something? So just to kind of give you some background on how we've come up with a lot of the things that we're doing now, and then we did this at the beginning of the Move Illinois program. We did it at the beginning of the CRP prior to that. We sat down with those who have historically had issues with capital construction, went right to the heart of those groups. We sit down with Environmental Law and Policy Center, sit down with Open Lands, National Resource Defense Council, Friends of the Forest Preserve, sit down with the Forest Preserves, and basically ask kind of the questions, what would they really like to see us do during construction? So a lot of the things that we've done from a construction standpoint really came from those discussions, where we hear from Open Lands, who have sued us in the past, and they're always engaged in our different committees. The vision that was put forward with you and the director with the
transition.
Strategic advisory team. But those visions, that what we heard at those, it wasn't just that we heard it, we followed up with it and developed these programs on the capital side. I think, this was maybe about 4 or 5 years or so ago, the ultimate honor that you get is from your peers, and actually the peers on from the other side. So we actually won an award, a top award from the Chicago Wilderness. Again, a group of agencies who voted on the top award who have sued us in the past. Mm-hmm. So I think that was kind of telling what we've done on the capital side, because they liked what we're doing. Yes, there's always room to improve, but we've gone to that friends of everybody group, friends of everybody's enemies of ours sometimes, and kind of try to figure out what we can do. So and like I said, that's kind of the litmus test on how we continue to improve. And just go back to them, because it's, they give us the that's, you know, that's, you got to go to your hardest people and figure out what you could do to improve. So, and that's why we engage, as you see in the 53 project, Open Lands has been at the table, and ELPCs, because they're always present.
And you can learn.
Mm-hmm. I want to say, I believe that the Totally is demonstrating a lot of leadership in this area, but I think one of the things that we recognize and why we are so interested in this Invest tool and this LCA tool, so now we can actually measure some of these things, because I don't think that exists across all the agencies. Like, I don't think we have that information to say, okay, this is, they got a 90, we got an 80. Mm-hmm. So I think that's the that's where we're moving to, though. And I believe we are. There's a lot of push internally to, you know, to try to do better all the time. And you know, Brian was mentioning on the material side, we're consistently looking for ways that are green and save us money.
Thank you. I'm sorry.
And with respect to investing, as kind of Paul alluded to there, we've been looking at highway rating systems for a while now, evaluating them. So IDOT Region 1 developed ILAST. There's numerous other rating systems out there that different state DOTs have developed. But in order to try and standardize things as much as possible and to have the highest level of support, we went with the federally adopted rating system, and that being the Invest. So this will allow us a good benchmark to rate ourselves, not only against our own projects, but against others as well.
And Invest takes you from planning all the way through maintenance and operations. So it's not just what you're doing in construction, it's a matter of what are you doing throughout.
There's three different modules of it. There's a planning module, there's a project development module, and then there's an operation maintenance module. So we're implementing all three. Obviously, right now, probably the biggest focus is on the project development side, and that's design and construction. But we are also working to rate ourselves and find ways to improve on the planning and operations.
I'm sorry. I have one more question. Just picking up, Araka, on what you had said about bringing in the environmental groups, as we're doing our own assessment of ourselves on Invest, are we bringing those people back in and sharing with them the place that we're successful and the places where they may have some ideas about how to help us be more successful? Is that part of your...
That's a good comment and recommendation. We haven't done that yet, but it's a very good recommendation.
Okay.
We're still engaging with those groups, right?
Yes.
So, I mean, we're still open, and there's an open dialogue on the commentary. So, I guess it's just a matter of solicitation specific, you know.
Specific to Invest, it might be something, it's something to consider that, you know, bring, somehow figuring out how to bring them into that that process. It's a good point.
And maybe it's not Invest per se, maybe it's just our overview of our self-assessment on how we're doing.
I think what you're suggesting is if you go out and get input from folks on how you can improve, it's important to report back so they know, you know, what we've accomplished and can give us further input and or just understand that we're listening carefully and have tried to implement some of the ideas that they have. So I think that occasional meeting and discussion allows us both to get input, but also to report back. I think that's my thought.
Didn't you have Chicago Orbis here?
Yep. So, it's early October. Chicago Orbis had their corporate council meeting here in the boardroom, and I gave them a presentation on our efforts, of which they were very enthused about. And not to say that we met with, you know, all those groups at the beginning of the program and conversation stopped. The door definitely hasn't closed. You know, depending on what the projects are and what the needs are, we have meetings with those groups and update them on our progress. Now, a formal, hey, this is where we are now, and this is where we were, and this is what you asked, that hasn't been conducted. But it's a good point, and it's a good recommendation.
Okay. It was actually a question.
Thank you. You take it as an
All right. So getting into sustainable design and construction now, these next three projects that I'm going to highlight might have a little bias to them because I am responsible for two of them, and then one had a fair bit of input into. But I feel they do a really great job of highlighting kind of that triple bottom line of meeting the social, economic, and environmental aspects of sustainability. And the first two are going to be our wetland mitigation sites, or two of our wetland mitigation sites. So the Orland Grasslands South Addition, it's a 160-acre site immediately south of the Orland Grasslands Complex, which is a 960-acre site. So it's a unique partnership with our next two, this project and the next one, are unique partnerships with Forest Preserves, where we worked with them. They purchased the land, we restored it, and then we also incorporate human use into it via parking lots and facilities for people to use while there, and then a trail system. And I apologize, I'm just realizing my exhibit isn't 100%. It got cut off a little bit. But regardless, you know, we'll have approximately 1.5 miles of trail on this site. It'll be a fully restored with wetlands. There'll be some, or the wetlands will be restored. There'll be some creek restoration, and there'll be a significant amount of prairie restoration as well. Then the Pine Dunes mitigation site up in Lake County. Again, it's a partnership with the Lake County Forest Preserve. It's a 315-acre site. Similar to the Orland site, there'll be wetland and prairie restoration. There'll be some creek restoration as well. And then this site will have approximately 3 miles of bike and pedestrian trails incorporating into it as well. So getting at the social, economic, and environmental benefits are rather obvious in that, you know, there's a substantial amount of restoration that's going on. The economics benefit is that partnership. So you know, they purchase the land, we work with them to restore it, and then the social aspect is the incorporation of human use into these sites. So there's some other means and methods which you can do mitigation banking, so you just buy credit from a mitigation bank. Those mitigation banks, there's no public use in them. It's just a large area of land that gets restored. So we feel that these are good opportunities for us in the communities which they're around.
So I know in the past one of the issues has been the ongoing maintenance of these sites. As we've partnered with the Forest Preserves, they will be responsible for maintaining the sites?
We have responsibility for 5 to 7 years.
Okay.
Depending on what permits, the mm-hmm. Corps permits are requiring. So there's certain aspects, and not to get too much in the weeds, but the creek restoration, we have a 7-year maintenance and monitoring requirement. The rest of it, the wetland, upland restoration, we have a 5-year maintenance and monitoring requirement. So we have 5-year contracts with contractors to do the restoration and to maintain it. And so after 5 years, it should be fully established. The theory is that it's fully established, and long-term maintenance is minimal compared to those first 5 years. And then, yes, at that time, it gets turned over to the Forest Preserve District. They have full ownership of it and maintenance responsibilities.
Mm-hmm.
All right. And then the last project for capital sustainability that I'm going to highlight is the 9047 interchange. As you all are aware, there's a fair bit of green initiatives that have been incorporated into this interchange, some of them being a geothermal heating and cooling system for the buildings there. The buildings have a reflective roof. There's vegetative trellises that have been built around the buildings. We're testing out permeable pavements on some of the shoulders to see how they hold up. And then we also have a rather substantial stormwater treatment system at these facilities.
Could you explain,
yes, sir,
a little bit about the purpose and the way the detention basin with infiltration, how that functions for the group?
Yeah, happy to. So we have numerous stormwater inputs into these basins. So the basins are, stormwater flows into the basins, and then it will fill up to a certain point, and once it reaches a certain point in this particular interchange, there's some overflow to these infiltration cells to capture and hold and intentionally infiltrate, or intentionally, it's designed specifically to hold and infiltrate water now. The other BMPs as well have infiltration capabilities, but those infiltration basins are specifically designed to try and capture and hold as much water as possible, and they'll hold those and let that water trickle into into the ground, or pardon me, infiltrate. So it's a little bit different than our typical bioswales.
Why is that important?
It helps reduce stormwater volumes that are leaving our system. So what we're trying to do is maintain existing release rates pre-construction with post-construction. So
which helps control flooding and runoff of bad things from roadways and other things like that, or
removes pollutants, number one, or I say flooding is number one, and then removal of pollutants is number two. So downstream flooding, you don't want to increase off-site flows or flows from our site to downstream recipients, because then there's the potential for bank erosion, flooding, things like that. It's detrimental to anybody downstream from the project area. So the intent is to maintain existing release rates, and then also to improve the stormwater quality that leaves the site. So we have some consultants that are monitoring the site and or the efficiencies of it, and in going out there and looking at it, they found that total suspended solids, they've monitored that total suspended solids are about 10 milligrams per liter, where a normal highway runoff is about 140 milligrams per liter of total suspended solids. So it's doing a great job of capturing and holding those pollutants, where if this wasn't there, we would be having or realizing those benefits.
Where do those pollutants ultimately go?
They stay there in the basin, the suspended solids stay there in the basin, and so it's a great question. So there's long-term maintenance associated with it. On the North Tri-State, we have about 7 miles of bioswales that we've built there, and right now we're actively monitoring those. We've just completed our fourth year of post-construction monitoring on those, and we're trying to determine how long you have, what's the life of a stormwater BMP, a basin like this, or a bioswale, before it needs to be excavated, reconstructed, some type of large-scale maintenance needs to be done, other than some simple trash cleanout or vegetation enhancements. So there's not solid literature out there on long-term maintenance needs for stormwater BMPs, but that's something that we're actively pursuing in the Tri-State to get a better grasp on.
The building there in the picture with the reflective roof, what's in that building?
It's the electronical components for power operate the toll plaza.
So keeping that cool.
Because this is all electronic, this interchange, so this is the equipment, basically.
Correct.
And keeping that cool is important, and that's what reflective roof.
Exactly.
Isn't the main ingredient in that substance for reflective roofs, isn't that a natural ingredient of some kind?
Soy? I think some of them use soy.
I think there's
soy.
It is. Yeah. There's some different materials that you can use. Yeah. I think if you use a geomembrane, it's a soy-based product, but there's also some metal roofs and things like that, different technologies that have a reflective rating to them. So.
Okay.
Do you want to cover it with vegetation? Is that what those trellises?
The trellises are for the sides of the buildings, for insulation against sun's rays there. So we did put a green roof on it, we put a reflective roof, and then we've got vegetation on the sides of the building to provide some.
But the trellis, so the trellises is are for growing some kind of
vegetation
on the side of the buildings.
So. So Brian, this is the first building in the tollway system that's utilized geothermal heat, right?
Correct.
Okay. And I understand that that's not a manned building. That's so what's the experience been as far as the effectiveness of use of geothermal in maintaining, you know, the limited parameter and what we're allowed in heat variance? And what are we seeing as far as recovery on that?
So right now we're seeing that it's about an 18% more efficient system than similar building. So we used the Ola because that was the most recent plaza building that we constructed before this. So in comparing this building to the Ola interchange, it's 18% more efficient. And so over a year, now these buildings don't draw a lot of power. Over the year, it's been 1 year of monitoring, it's been approximately $1,200 in savings.
So based on the cost for the system, when do we expect a recovery from the investment? Have you calculated that?
Recovery is about 25-year recovery.
And but as far as the effectiveness of it, we're overall, there haven't been issues. We've been happy with the effectiveness of the way it's been able to maintain the heat in the building?
Yes.
And that functions both for heating and cooling, though.
Correct. And one thing, it's also significantly reduced the carbon footprint of the building as well. It's around about 18,000 pounds of CO2 emissions that have been reduced. So from a cost standpoint, $1,200 over a year, some savings, yes. From the pollution reduction standpoint, CO2 emission reduction standpoint, it's rather significant. All right. So now moving forward, we'll get into a little bit of what we're doing on the operational standpoint here at the agency. And that being, we've conducted three rather large initiatives, and that being conducted an energy audit back in 2010. We've established a fuel reduction task force, and we also have developed a paper recycling program, or a recycling program here at CA, which didn't exist. So the energy audit that was conducted, it was a system-wide energy audit, but one of the major findings was that in the audit was that we didn't have a way to track any of our utilities. If you would have asked us, say 4 or 5 years ago, to tell me how much energy, or ask me how much energy did we consume at a plaza or this building in the month of March in 2009, or give me the aggregate of consumption for the year for this building, that would have taken a fair bit of time, and now that can be pulled together in a matter of minutes. So that energy audit really highlighted the need to better manage our utilities. And through that, we were able to figure out billing structures that weren't being billed appropriately for. There was a number of accounts that we shouldn't have been billed for, so underpass lighting, things along those lines, that should have been under municipalities or others that should have been billed for it. We found those out, a number of other things. And so through sifting through the database and cleaning up all of our bills, while it's not a great green sexy initiative of, hey, we've done all these things, just sorting through everything clearly, we were able to reduce our energy consumption by 25% from, what was it, by 2012. So from 2010 to 2012, in those 2 years, we were able to clean everything up and cut our energy consumption by 25%. So system-wide, not just this facility. Fuel Reduction Task Force, our fleet manager, Tom Delvin, has done a great job with this. we established a goal, or set up the task force back in 2010, and with a goal of reducing fuel usage by 10%, and we've done that each year except for this past year, 2014, largely because the harsh winter that we had and extra state police patrols and maintenance patrols that we had out on the roadway. So, and then again, the central administration building recycling program. It was something that didn't exist here. And it's been established, so everybody, I believe, now has a blue bucket at their desk for paper recycling. I think there was a couple stragglers who didn't have their bucket not too long ago, but I think we've gotten that cleared up. And it seems to be a very successful program. If you go around at the coffee closets, you'll see also some aluminum and plastic recycling, and those are pretty consistently full. And they're...
So what I think was happening before was everything was going into one container, basically. And then I think we were making an effort, or people were making an effort, to separate things out. But, of course, then paper is contaminated with whatever was in the pop can or what have you. So it's, you know, it's a, of course, small thing. But
are you saying that you have individualized containers in certain places? In other words, in the city of Aurora, every office has, office area has, you know, three containers, well marked, one for aluminum or metal, one for plastic, another for paper. Every desk basically has a paper, recycled paper container. But are we saying that we have that well distributed within this building?
Yes.
Okay.
So every desk should have a blue paper recycling.
And how about the aluminum and...
Those are well marked at each coffee closet at the north and south side of the building. So
there are a couple of them on every floor.
Yeah.
So the coffee closets, but also I think you'll see if you walk on either side of our, I don't know, opening here, you know, stairwell, you know, you'll see them out here too. So for the cans and bottles and things like that. But everybody, for paper, that happens right at the desk.
We have fairly compact aluminum and plastic containers. More, I think, dispersed more frequently than what you're talking about. They don't take up a lot of room, so just a thought.
Yeah.
The other thing we do, interestingly, I've talked about AID, which is a state, what do you call it?
State use
entity, that they actually come and collect our recyclables. Mm-hmm. That's part of their business, that people with disabilities handle that. And that's part of their business, and it might be worth looking into that possibility. They also do electronics recycling, which is more lucrative for them than regular recycling.
And I'm sorry, that was EID?
AID.
AID.
Association for Individual Development.
How about the maintenance sites? What are we doing there about recycling?
It's a good question. So the maintenance sites have largely taken upon themselves to do their own recycling activities. And so I know that they have, you know, kind of each one has their own recycling program for aluminum and things along those lines. I'm not certain on the paper collection at those facilities. I know where paper's a little
bit... They should have the same blue... you know, separate containers for paper there. So, but we can check and get back and confirm for sure. That's really more in operations than Brian's, although he's talking about it, but we'll confirm that and get back to you. But certainly they should if they don't, obviously.
So, also a good question, which steps you back to implementation of LEED for those facilities, and that is it's a minimum requirement. You can't get a LEED certification unless you have recycling at those facilities. So all new ones, yes, undoubtedly they'll have it. The existing facilities, it's a good question.
What about the use of styrofoam in the building?
This building?
It's technically it's recyclable, but typically, practically, it isn't. Do you have a ban on styrofoam materials?
Mm-mm. No.
We do not. And the only place in the building that might offer styrofoam would be the cafeteria.
Yeah, it sure does.
Yeah.
I think you ought to have a little discussion with them.
We have requested in the cafeteria the vendor to look for ways to remove the use of styrofoam cups. So they'll get back to us with a proposal or plan, or you know, whether or not they're able to comply with that. But we have asked for that.
Yeah. The other thing the city of Aurora does, and you know, this may or may not appeal to you, but we won a number of awards for best tasting water in Illinois and this kind of stuff, but which brought to the fore the idea that we do not allow our departments to buy bottled water, period. And, you know, whether or not you have the best tasting water, the reality is that, you know, it all comes in plastic containers, which just kind of adds to the pollution, or you might say, generally speaking. However, I understand that bottled water is very popular, so I don't want to raise anything that is, you know, highly unpopular, but that's just something else that we do.
Who judges that contest? I
mean, where
would you go
compare those? The man.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah, we're the best in the world. No, it's I can't remember. It's a statewide organization that deals with potable water. They have that every year, and then I think it goes national as well. So, but anyway,
it's a good idea, a good comment. I know that they make drinking fountains now. Where you can go up and put a water bottle in front of, and it'll fill that water bottle for you. So, something definitely to contemplate as we kind of progress here a little bit in our discussion.
And where does solar fit into any of this?
So we tested and are in the process still of gathering data on the solar panels that you've seen out here mm-hmm. on our helicopter pad. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we've implemented or are incorporating solar into the new construction at M1, right?
Yes.
So, you know, I think we would see, depending on how the data from these panels turns out, and of course our experience with M1, incorporating them mm-hmm. more in certainly builds, one of the things we could assess is how much to incorporate them in existing.
Use November and December or January of this year in your test.
Right,
where
data.
We have no solar.
In the sun.
Yeah.
So.
But, I mean, you want to see, I mean, there definitely is solar energy making it through the atmosphere into the atmosphere. So, performance in these types of conditions would be pretty good information to have when determining.
Thank you.
So, obviously, you don't want to judge its performance solely on.
Sorry. Yeah, I know on the fuel you have an ongoing goal of 10% reduction annually, which is noble at some point. I suspect
below the baseline. Below the baseline here. So not from year to year keep going down. I think we're more realistic about our abilities probably.